welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Yes, welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. I'm your host, Jack. This is episode number 22 for November the 12th, 2013. If you get a chance, stop by the website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows, or you can leave me a voicemail message, which I wish you would, either questions or comments or whatever you want to talk about servers or server rooms or networks, at 724-701-0911. Or you can simply Skype that into Jack's Tech Corner. Or if you wish, just drop me an email. That's a pretty easy way to get a hold of me, at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And please, if you get a chance, follow me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. I wanted to start this show this week, since we have a lot to go over and a lot to talk about. This week, we're going to start talking a little bit, first of all, about the show we did last week. If you remember, we talked about RAID and the different RAID configurations. Well, fortunately, we did have a comment this week from a listener, and the listener's name was Mike. Mike, I'd like to thank you very much if you're listening to this show. I appreciate the efforts, and I did email Mike also. But what Mike wanted to tell us about was he gave me a little bit more background of what he does and a better way to do things that he believes. And believe me, I'm all up for learning. So let's go ahead and read this comment. RAID 5. Now, if you remember, I told you we use RAID 1 and RAID 5. How about this? RAID 5 should be avoided unless you're using SSDs and can avoid a URE on a resolver operation. Your array should survive a single drive failure, but the drive failure and resulting increased load will inevitably lead to either one, a second intermittent drive failure, or two, an unrecoverable read error during the resilvering operation. He says you should stick with RAID 10. And I'm also going to turn that comment on. I'm going to actually click the approve button on the comment. He points us to two different articles, to two different folks' blogs that you can read. And I did read those, Mike, and it's a really, really interesting reading. I did talk to my partners at work, and we went through this, and I said, what is a RAID 10? And they pretty much said, I never heard of a RAID 10. So we talked about that. We were going through the drive configurations of a RAID 10 system. And I meant to actually do some more research and bring this up here. So I'm going to do this as I'm talking here, just to get the background of a RAID 10. And we are going to talk a little bit about the setup of a RAID number 10. Now, as I just brought up here, I brought up the Geek Stuff's website. And RAID 10 is showing me it's RAID 0, RAID 1, RAID 5, and they'd RAID 10. RAID 10 is also known as 1 plus 0. Now I'm going to try to read down through here to see where they actually have this set up at. Because we felt at work that it was 10 drives. And in already looking at that, this is not the case. So you don't need 10 drives. We thought it would be 10 drives and you'd have two drives to write your information to, your data bits to rebuild to, and you'd have basically two RAID 5 arrays, I guess, is what we were thinking to build a RAID 10. But this is not the case. And by all means, go out and read those blogs and check those blogs out a little bit, and you'll see on there what he was talking about, what Mike explains there to you. But this is using a minimum of 4 disks. This is also called a stripe of mirrors. It's excellent redundancy as the blocks are mirrored. And it's excellent performance as the blocks are striped. And you can also, it says, if you can afford the dollar, This is best operation for any mission critical applications, especially it's talking about this now, databases. So if you're using databases, such as we do, we use a ton of SQL databases. This is how you want to set this up, using four different disks. Now, a minimum of four. Obviously, you can have more. More is always better than less. You know, especially when you're doing this stuff for failover, for hard drive safety, and for all that stuff, you have to have more is always better than less, because when you have that drive failure. Now, what is Mike talking about re-silvering operation? What does that mean? What does re-silver mean? What that means, if you remember last week, I told you about our little story from the trench. That actually means where you have that drive failure, you pull that drive out of that array. And I told you, we stuck a new drive in the case and we threw it back into the array. When we did that, it took a long time to rebuild or re-silver, is what you're talking about. And he's saying that as that's doing that, you're putting increased load on the other array. Right? So now you can have that drive failure, another drive failure, because it's really pounding those drives trying to. Now you remember what this is doing. Think about this a minute. It's still handing out your data. So it's still doing its operational type duties that the server has. Plus, on that backside, it's trying to rebuild that data at the same time to get that drive back into that array. So that is why it's so critical to have more disks than less. And Mike, I'd really like to thank you very much for putting that comment in there and clarifying that. Because I tell people every day with this business, I've been in technology, I told you guys and girls out there, for like 25 years overall. And you have to open your mind and learn every single day. Things get better, right? Technology gets better daily, maybe even hourly. So you have to keep your mind open to absorb it. Okay. So moving on, I'm going to read an email that I received, and this email is from a listener out there to the show, and I told the wife the other morning that this is what makes doing these shows very, very near and dear to my heart, because I always believe that we should pay it forward. So as I'm giving you information out there, put this forward and give it to other folks out there. Spread the love, right? We all love technology. We all work it every day, and share your information. Don't keep all this bottled up in your head, because probably sooner or later your head may just explode because you're going to have so much data in your head. You want to share the love. Anyway, so Jake, I want to thank you very much for your email, and I'm going to read his email to you right now. And this is just him just sending in to me just basically to say hello. I just wanted to say thank you for your podcast. I am a CS major, but unfortunately, I don't get enough IT and server admin information, as we tend to look at much lower levels of abstraction. This is, however, a big interest of mine, and I have been struggling through creating a small office server as something of a passion project. I am finding that the information is out there, but only in small pieces. And it's nice to have your podcast to lead me to technology that I otherwise wouldn't or haven't yet had a chance to look up on my own. Thank you. I look forward to future podcasts and catching up on the past episodes. I'm glad I found your podcast. Keep up the good work. Well, Jake, thank you so much for that inspirational email. You know, it's the thing when you're doing podcasts like this, we're sitting here, we're not live. Some of the other shows I do, like when I do a Sunday morning photography show, when I do them live, I can see the chat room, I can see things happening. But when you sit here and do a podcast, I'm basically talking to myself, right? I'm talking to a computer that's just recording my voice. And we hope that it's getting out there. We hope that people are listening. And I always said, if I can touch five people, if I could teach five people, then it's worth me sitting here doing show notes. It's worth me sitting here to do this, just to maybe help five people. And, you know, I think over the course of the years since 2005 of doing podcast and vidcast, I think I've been helping a few people. But inspirational emails like that are good for any podcasters. If you folks out there listen to other podcasts, send them an email, put a comment on our YouTube video and say, hey, thank you. And that's even enough, right? I do that myself. It's like, thanks, because you're looking for the information, you're trying to find it, and we as podcasters really appreciate the positive feedback. Now, in tonight's show, now that we got through all that stuff, and I'm glad we did. I like getting the feedback, like I said. But in tonight's show, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about virtual servers and how we can save the overhead and sometimes add a little more to and add a little more headaches. Wait, let me rephrase that. I want to talk to you about virtual servers and how we can save overhead and sometimes even save a lot of major headaches just by using virtualization. Now, we're going to talk about two main software packages that I know of, and then we're going to go into the one software package that I do use because I'm experienced with it, and I know how it works, and I know how to interact with it. So the two main packages that we are talking about here that does virtualization very well, and if you know of more, by all means, comment on these shows and say, hey, Jack, here's another one I know of that works equally well. But the two main ones I know about is the VMware, and we are currently using the ESXi, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes, a little bit more about that. But there are a few drawbacks of ESXi, and I'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Now, there's also the Windows Hyper-V that has came into the market. It's very, very widespread use. And I have a lot of friends that are systems administrators that swear by it. Now, I've never set it up. I've never installed it and never played with it. But I would assume that it works on the same basis of VMware. I understand there's a snap-in on your computer, for your system tools, and there's a way that you virtualize computers. I've seen it. I've been to a lot of conferences and seen it. I've just never used it. And probably the reason that is because I'm an ESXi guy. And networking is very, very much just like anything else you'll do in life. And that is the case where when we learn something, when we know it works, then we very much simply stick to it and use it in some cases. Now, in other cases, such as desktop operating systems, we probably move those more rapidly than we do our back-end virtualization software. And that's just because I think the user dictates that. But the user doesn't see what you're virtualizing on, so they don't really care where their servers are running. That's up to us, the network administrators, to take care of. Now, with that said, we are using ESXi. And if you're using Windows Hyper-V, I'd like to hear from you. Maybe call that voice number and say, hey, Jack, you know, this is what we do. It works really well. And maybe tell me how it works in that voicemail, and I will play it on the air, and we will let other people know we can learn from you. And I would love to do that. But anyway, we're going to talk about ESXi and ESX. And I'm going to tell you the differences between the two, and then you can figure out what's going to be good for your network. And I'll tell you why we use the one basically over the other and why it works for us. Now, ESXi, it's for a single physical server, and it's used for virtualization. Now, what's nice about ESXi is it's absolutely free. Now, I believe it works really, really well for, let me start by saying, a small server farm. And then I'm going to tell you that it's working for ours, which is a large server farm. But we made it work, and we probably need to go to ESX, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. But it is very restrictive, as it's holding you to one physical server. Now, we're going to elaborate on this a little bit as we go through this stuff, but I'm going to tell you about it in steps here. Now, so what is ESX? ESX is also from VMware. It is the big brother to ESXi. To me, I'm not even sure really what the I stands for, and I should probably look that up before the show, but I consider ESXi to be that starting point, that foundation. You said, well, I'm going to learn this. So take one of your physical servers, install it on the server. Once you get it installed on that server, then start playing around with it and get the idea of how it works. Because those physical servers, those VMs, will migrate to ESX. And that's just about where we are in our network. That's probably our next step is what we want to do. Now, ESX will cost you. And the way they charge, the last time I checked, is they charge you on the number of processor layers you have. They used to charge on sockets, but I think they got smart because you can have a single socket server, right, with four cores. So they're charging you based on the core now. So let's say if you have a dual socket server and you're running two quad cores, you're going to be paying ESX licensing for eight cores. And I think that's because they know that the VM, the way the VMs work when you put those servers on there, is you can say, look, I want you to run one core, two core, three cores, or four. You can even tell it to run two processors in your VM and pull from both those processors. Because it's all basically a virtual world, and sometimes it's hard to wrap your head around because you can actually hand out. Now, it's a numbers game. It's when I used to run my own internet service. We had an internet service years ago when we sold dial-up internet. And when we did that, it was very much a numbers game. And I don't know if you folks are out there long enough to remember dial-up, sometimes you'd call and get a busy signal. Well, the reason is not because it was busy. The reason is because we would have something called a ratio. And our ratio was basically, at that time, I think we started out at 8 to 1. And then we ended up with, like, I think when we sold the company, we were at like 4 to 1. A ratio is we had 4 customers for every 1 phone line that we owned. And it's a ratio. It's like playing roulette. It's a gamble. And when we started out at 10 to 1, it was really bad. We got a lot of calls, a lot of busy signals. And this is kind of leading us into this whole core thing in virtualization. So when you're virtualizing, you're doing the same thing. You're saying, look, I have 2 processors, but you may have 3 virtual servers on your computer or on your physical box. Each one of them virtual servers may be running one processor, the other one's running one, the other one's running 2. So if you think about that, that's 4 sockets or 4 core processors, however you want to say that. But it's a numbers game. You're hoping that that load on that particular, all those servers at one time are not going to max out your physical box because you virtualized it. And that virtualization software has a really cool way of figuring all that math out. And that's what makes it a win-win situation. Now, what's nice about ESX is you can have 2 physical servers. And let's say we're going to go server 1, 2, 3, and 4. Keep this simple. So I have actual server software loaded, 1, 2, 3, and 4 on physical server 1. And I can have 1, 2, 3, and 4 on physical server 2. So if physical server 1 hiccups, dies, or throws a fit, or this is the nice part about this, or if 1, 2, and 3 starts getting a lot of usage and get pounded, the secondary server will pick up and 4 will turn on it, and it will take the load off that first physical server and dump it to your second physical server, which again has more processors that it can use, more RAM and everything. And it can take up that load. It can pick up that slack. That is where the ESX comes in really, really handy. The second part is the failover mechanism. So what failover is, basically, is if you can think of this, now look at the 1 physical server and the 2nd physical server. The 1 physical server, something starts to happen to the server itself. The motherboard fries, something happens. All of those servers, if it sees it, the control center will say, look, we're having trouble on physical server 1. Everybody, please migrate to physical server 2. So when all those servers migrate to physical server 2, guess what your users end up doing? Nothing. Pretty much. From what I've seen, the demonstrations and everything I've read on it, and all the conferences I've been to and we've seen it working, is those users usually don't experience anything because those physical servers are moving so rapidly down and they're firing up and they're just taking over and everything's good to go. Now, folks, what happens if you have 1 physical server in your box? It's your Active Directory server and it fries in the afternoon. Yep. You're spending a very, very long night in your server room and you're going to be there for a long time rebuilding that actual server, getting all the software loaded, getting everything fired back up. And it's funny because we were at a Microsoft conference about a year ago, And we met a fellow there, We met a gentleman there, and the gentleman, we were talking to him about virtualization. He goes, I don't like to virtualize. I don't want to put all my eggs in one box. And I often say this, you're putting all your eggs in one box. If that box breaks, all your eggs are cracked, game over. And that is kind of what we're doing with ESXi. We kind of have everything on that one physical server. It's not migrating anywhere. It's kind of held to that server. Even though we have another physical server with ESXi on it, and we are able to have those servers and bring those up because we have them on both, but we have to recognize a problem. We kill server A and bring up server B. That's what we do. You can also do that for maintenance. If you want to do maintenance on server A, you can take server A down, bring up server B on your virtualization stuff, and you're good to go. You're moving and you're in the right direction. But the ESXi with the automatic failover, you could be away, you could be on vacation, and you can be enjoying a martini by the beachside and relaxing on your umbrella chair, knowing that your servers are good, and if anything happens, they'll notify you anyway. There's ways to do this, and we'll talk about notification software one day where you can sleep a lot easier knowing that your network will call you if it needs you. So that is the way ESX works with the failover stuff. I hope that kind of puts it into perspective for you to tell you how things actually are running. Now, let's talk about ESXi will only work properly. Will only work properly. And a lot of guys miss this out there. A lot of people, when they build their networks, don't understand this part, or they slept through this part in class and they don't really get it. But you can't, you cannot use the physical drives in the physical box with the ESX. Because folks, what happens if you have a desktop computer and the hard drive crashes? You're right. The operating system and all the software goes with it. Now, on ESX, as good as it is and as wonderful and as all the power that it has in it, if it should happen to die, guess what it does? It takes the physical server and the physical hard drives could go with it. It can't migrate to the other physical server because you have all of the hard drives in that box. So if that box catches on fire, the other server is not going to do you any good. You have to have a drive array. And I would recommend a SCSI array, or as I told you last week that we run in our network, we have a SAS array. And those drives are running at 22,000 RPM. They're amazing. It's an amazing box. I originally purchased it from Sun, who now is purchased by Oracle, if you've been keeping up on the acquisitions through the tech world. And that box is, as I said, it's just an amazing box. It's just 12 SAS drives in there, and they're just doing their job every day, just chirping along and doing their thing. So in that case, the way we have ours set up with that SCSI array or with that array of drives, that is where the virtual servers are sitting. They're getting talked to and they're getting controlled by the physical boxes, but the drives themselves. Now, look at the eggs in the basket scenario. If we somehow lose 12 SAS drives, right, in a RAID array, whatever that RAID array may be, if we would lose all of the 12 drives, then you could actually lose all of your physical servers, right? Because everything, all your virtualization that way would be gone. And I'm often asked that way. When you go in front of a board, if you work for a company and you go in front of a board and you're pitching this deal about virtualization, you need money to bring this into your network, they are going to ask you those tough questions. Wonder if the box goes down. Here's my idea. Here's what I tell them. I have more chances of one physical server dropping than an array of 12 disks going at one time. I think when I tell them that and they say, well, how long is it going to take you to rebuild a virtual server? And if you have these backed up, it's not going to take long at all because you can pull that virtual server. Now, you may lose some data. I'm sure you have a backup plan, but you may lose some data in that virtual server that may be in there, maybe a couple users you added if it's an active directory domain, maybe something like that, you know, since your last backup. But you would pull that backup VM back into your new array or whatever, your new virtual server. You would click on, power that virtual box on, and you're ready to go. All your software's loaded. If a physical hardware goes, it's a lot different. And you know this, if you've ever been in this situation, I've been there. We had an Exchange server go, and we didn't have it at that time. This was years ago. We didn't virtualize. And the physical server died. We lost the email for 2 days waiting for a part. Now, granted, it was a part, so it was a power supply at that time, and it was a proprietary thing, so we did get it. We got it back up in a couple of days, and we got our email functioning. Since then, and we're going to have a class one night, we're going to talk about this one in the podcast. Since then, we went to a cloud-based service, and we'll talk about the differences in that. And I think as a network administrator, you're going to have to, at some point, let go. We are very much... some of us anyway, I believe that network administrators at times, and I don't mean to offend anybody out there because I know I was this way. We are control freaks. We want to control the whole enchilada, right? We want to keep control of this thing. We know what's in it. It's our passwords. Don't touch our boxes, right? Sometimes we got to get out of there and we got to realize that we are here for the end user. Whatever company you work for, I don't care where you work. I don't care if you work. A friend of mine just got a job at a bank in a major data center. He works for all those customers out there with that ATM card sticking in a Mac machine. He doesn't work out there for himself. They don't care where these servers are. They don't care who's handling these servers. Our job is 99.9% uptime. If you can give 100%, then bless you. You're doing a great job. I never tell anybody 100%, but we do tend to use some cloud-based services, and we'll talk about that another night. And I'll also talk about, and I'll make sure I put it in those notes, where we'll talk about cloud-basing your Active Directory servers, which scares the crap out of me, and we'll talk about that sometime. Now, what do we gain from virtualization? Other than I told you, we get to sleep a little bit better. There's less overhead of our network, and we're going to break that down for you now before we get out of here off of this show. So let's go ahead and talk about this stuff. The first thing I preach to our board is we are going to save power. Now, power, and there's a big word, at least it was a couple of years ago. It might still be getting kicked around out there. I haven't heard it that much lately. But when I did it, I just said we are going to be doing a green initiative. And anytime you take your company and you put it on a flyer or a brochure that we are a green corporation, that means that we are doing everything we can to maintain balance in the physical world, right? And we are conserving power. We're recycling. We're green. So as soon as I threw that out there that we will be a more green organization, I had a green light. They're like, great, let's do that virtualizing thing that you want to do. Go ahead, have a good time. And that's how we did it, because we are saving a ton of power. Folks, I purchased a server in my house. I still have a Dell PowerEdge 1850. I bought it. I put it in the basement. And that is what I'm teaching my classes off of. I teach you online classes. And if you haven't seen those, we'll talk about those at the end of the show here. But leaving that thing on, first of all, it's hard to sleep because you can hear them big fans running in our basement. Second, I think the electrical meter in the house just kept on spinning because those servers consume a lot of energy. They really do. And if you put one in your house, you'll notice your electric bill going up a little bit. So the only time I really run those servers now in my basement is when I'm preparing new material for the classes I teach or for something else in that nature. Now, what's next other than power? Okay, so we save a little bit of electricity. We're saving some money, but we got to lay some money out for this hardware. Better use of resources. Now, we talked about that earlier, about how you can manage these resources, how you can give each virtual server a little bit more disk space. You can give it more memory. You can share your memory between different servers. But what we did in our network before we virtualized, you need to sit down with your team, or if you're that single person out there, remember when I start to show the guy or the girl, the accidental techie, get into your server and look at the resource manager. Now, in that resource manager, I want you to take a peek in there and see during the peak times of your usage. Now, I don't know how many people you have in your network, our network, we're running, I told you, we're running about 800, 700 to 800 nodes on our network right now. So we have a big intensive network. But what we did was we sat down and we mapped out our resources, and we didn't do one day. What we decided to do was like a month of research on this during the peak times. And the max we ever used on that server, running one instance of, you know, Windows, I think it was at the time, 2008 server, is 25% resources. So we sat down and said, look, if we're only using 25% resources, it would stand to reason that you can put three virtual servers on this physical box and still have 25% remaining resources. And to this day, those boxes have been handling it. Actually, our one virtual or one ESXi server has five different servers running on it. But if you look, the one server, I think it does 5%. It physically runs a database backend, and it's used by about five users. But it's just really amazing that that server is just using such little resources that why would you have all that on a physical box? It just didn't really make sense to do that. So look at your overall resources, map it out, do a little spreadsheet, Excel spreadsheet, whatever you want to do, Microsoft Word document, and just kind of plot it out across there and say, look, this is what we did for a month. Check it each day at peak time and see where you're at and get an idea. And then you'll know about how many virtual servers you can put on there. Maybe you can start killing some of your other servers off and using them for something else. The next, if you use ESX, remember it is failover. If the box goes down, it will rebuild itself. The best case scenario now, don't go out and spend all this money for ESX and then put one physical server in with a SCSI drive array. You're not going to get the benefit. Just use the ESXi at that point. And I've had people do that. People call me and said, Jack, look, this is what I'm doing. I spent all the money. I bought this ESX. I have one physical server. And I'm like, why'd you waste your money? You're not getting the failover. You're not getting the stuff that it is built to do because you have to have two physical boxes and a SCSI array to make it work, right? All right. So I think I'm done talking at that point. My goodness, trying to get all this out there. And if you heard any pauses in there, I'm sorry, but there's times when one must have a sip of coffee or a little sip of beer, whatever you choose to be drinking tonight, and get a little dry when you're talking. But friends out there, I want to thank you so much for listening to this show. And you know what? As I said earlier, is if you ever turn your mind off to learning, we get a lot of interns through our organization, a lot of college interns. You know, they're just completing up their degrees. As you know, we've all live this, you know, where you have to go through and sit through these classes. Well, they come out and they think, hey, Jack, I know it all. I just learned everything. I know everything there is to know about computers. And I tell them, look, next year, or even this year, a new operating system is going to come out. A new service patch will come out. A new release candidate is going to come out. And guess what? Now you don't know everything again. School is wonderful, and I teach these kids, school is wonderful for theory. We all have to have the theory of computers. I think we all have the same base theory and knowledge that way. But folks, if you think for 1 minute that a computer, and think about all the computers you've ever worked on, computers have their own little thing going on in their little CPUs. And I don't know any way to explain that any better, but to me, and I tell everybody, every computer has its own little personality, right? It's not an exact science. If you sit down and you say this is an exact science, programming could be. I've done a lot of programming in my time. And, you know, if you get a syntax error and you fix it, there's a science to that. But the computers, the hardware themselves, sometimes they give you issues and you just can't explain why. And people we work for hate that because we're supposed to have the exact answer. Did you ever go to the doctors and sometimes a doctor, come on, 8 years of college, medical doctor, so many years of residency, and we just don't know what's wrong with you. And that does happen, right? We're the same way. We are computer doctors. And if you remember that and think about that, or if you're even on this level we're talking about tonight, you may be a network engineer or a network doctor. There's just some things that make you go, I always say that. You can use that. Just say there's just some things that make you want to go, you just don't know. And another thing I told my wife about tonight, I'm just wanting to touch base with this before we sign off here on this podcast, is I do not give timelines. Unless you're doing a project. If somebody says, hey, Jack, you and your team are going out and you're going to be, we just did a fiber run and rewired all of these network computers into the new fiber. Jack, how long will it take you to do that? Well, we knew that we put everything else aside. We closed all the other departments we had down, and the team came together and we worked on this one project. I said, look, it's going to take 4 hours. And it ended up taking a day. So it took us 8 hours, but I was close. As far as, here's a timeline, and you have all this other stuff that's in your bag that you got to work on. Or one day we had a great timeline. I walked in and a server crashed. Well, my main concern is my server crash. That's what I wanted to fix. So my timeline kind of gets screwed up. I don't believe in timelines in the technology field. I think another thing is if you're, I had a CEO come to me one time and said, Jack, I want a 5-year plan. I want you to write me a 5-year plan of where this technology is going and how much money we're going to spend in 5 years. I said, well, good luck, because I'm going to have to quit today, because that is impossibility. You can write a 5-year plan based on what technology we have today, but I guarantee you in 5 years, it's going to be cheaper, faster, and better. And if you know what's coming in 5 years, folks, don't stay in this field, right? One, start playing the lottery. Two, write your own book, because you are going to be a genius. And three, you should be making millions of dollars a year. You shouldn't be doing the networking aspect of it. Just my opinion. So folks, again, thank you so much for joining the show. I want to thanks to Mike and Jake there for sending me the great email and the great feedback. I appreciate that on these shows. It makes it so much better when you're podcasting. Now, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or, as I said, VMware ESXi, and we have that up on a server, and that is why I built the server or bought the server from my basement to teach these classes. Please take the minute, look at my online classes, and you will find those at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look at the very top. There's a link for the online classes. And these courses are self-paced. I've been getting a ton of great feedback from them. All you do is watch a video and you take a quiz. Now, the courses are low cost, and some people say, Jack, if these courses are so cheap, they must not be any good. I believe in paying it forward. I made them just enough where, you know, I'm comfortable putting those out there, and I want to teach you, but I want everybody to be able to afford it. That's why the cost is lower. I could run these things at $500 or $1,000, but I chose not to. When you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate in the mail. You can use that to hang on the wall. You can use that to put in a resume to send out to a new employer and maybe get that new job you're looking for with Windows Server or ESXi. Once again, if you get a chance, go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and you can sign up for those today. Or if nothing else, stop by the website and sign up on the bottom. I have a little thing on there for a mailing list or white papers we're starting or something we're going to be doing with that. And I will not give out your email address. Those are strictly for this show. Just to see if you're listening. And I appreciate you being out there. So folks, have a great work week. May all your servers be humming along tomorrow morning when you get to work. May all your networks be chirping along and doing their data transfer as they should be. I'll see you back here next Tuesday for another show from Tips from the Server Room. Take care, everybody. Have a great night. I'll see you then. Just listen to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.